supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. You know, I recently treated a 25-year-old man who was filled with anxiety and insecurity, always feeling that the world was unsafe and unpredictable. His father had bipolar disorder, and my patient spent his formative years never knowing what he was going to find when he came home from school. Imagine how his life would have been different if he and his father and his whole family had a discussion about bipolar disorder. But that takes courage, it takes insight, it takes knowledge. On today's show, we'll meet people who took the courageous step to take ownership of their illness and to begin a dialogue with their children, and not just with their children, but with the larger community. On today's show, we'll open up a conversation about parenting with a mental illness with guests Evan Kaplan, Melody Jackson, and Katie Kaplan, no relation to Evan. Evan Kaplan's co-founder and CEO of Child and Family Connection, an organization that supports parents with psychiatric disabilities and their children. Melody Jackson, a proud person in recovery from mental health challenges. She's a certified peer specialist and a certified recovery specialist. Katie Kaplan is assistant director of the Temple University Collaborative on Community Inclusion of Individuals with Psychiatric Disabilities. She oversees research studies and parenting-related initiatives. All three of you, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
If you are a parent with a history of mental illness, or if you were raised by one, we'd love to hear from you today. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Evan, we're doing this show because of an email you sent me. And you were the instigator, because you told us about a program you run called Child and Family Connections. What is it?
Child and Family Connections is an entrepreneurial nonprofit that we started a couple of years ago to support parents who have a mental illness and their children. Child and Family Connections started a couple of years ago as a loose collective, as a support group, and grew out of a request that my daughter had come to me and indicated that she was looking for other kids that she could talk to whose parents also have a mental illness. And I was not able to find such a program, so we started Child and Family Connections.
9-year-old.
She was 9 at the time.
Yeah, and this speaks volumes about the child that she was, is, that she could come to you. When and how did she learn about your mental illness?
She had known about my mental illness for a number of years, particularly from her mother. I'm divorced. And she got, frankly, a lot of misinformation at the time. So as we were in family therapy over the years, it began to come out that Charlotte was really not clear about what mental illness was about. And there was a lot of confusion on her part. And I think her initiative to request talking to other kids really came out from probably a frustration that she had and a need for more information.
So tell me more about what she really needed to talk about with other kids.
Sure. She wanted to know that she was not alone. I think one of the big issues for her was not understanding the difference between having a parent with a mental illness and having a parent, and not understanding decisions that are made as a parent And sort of associating them with decisions that are made as having a mental illness. So there are a lot of things that were happening in our family. For example, she wanted to go to private school, and I had said to her, we don't have the money right now to do that. It's something that we can talk about at another time. Her mother sort of used my mental illness as a fallback for the reason that I had said we can't go to the private school. And so there was that kind of misinformation or miscommunication.
Let's talk about your mental illness for a minute. What do you mean when you say you have a mental illness?
Sure. I'm diagnosed with bipolar disorder and ADHD, and I was diagnosed around age 32 or so. So it's been about 12 or 13 years at this point.
When were you diagnosed?
Around the 2000 time frame. So I was in my early 30s.
And how old was your...
Charlotte was 1.5 at the time. Mm. She's 12 now.
Okay. Katie, I want to turn to you as a professional in this area. Most children who have a parent whose behavior is erratic and unpredictable kind of take it on themselves and feel that it's their fault, or there's something they can and should do to make it better. And I would imagine this is pretty typical of children in this population.
Yeah, I think one of the things that Evan's group tries to promote, and I've tried to promote my research and our interventions, is this importance of communicating with your child about your illness or disability so that they understand. So, you know, for example, if you're a parent that has depression, and it's difficult for you to get out of bed, or you have a hard time always interacting with your child, that your child understands it's a symptom of your illness, or maybe it's a side effect of your medication, but it doesn't have to do with your love for them. So, and not knowing, children will, you know, come up with all sorts of things in their own head, and that's why it's so important. But for parents, it could be a struggle. You know, how do you talk to a five-year-old about bipolar disorder? You know, that's a hard conversation to start. Parents also don't even always recognize the importance of having it.
Well, and we know the majority of parents, A, don't know that they have mental illness. And if they do feel there's something wrong inside their head, you know, they feel this great shame about it and don't talk to anyone about it. So,
and there's also fear too that if you seek out help that it will be used against you and you might lose custody of your kids. So parents with mental illnesses, we did a study in Philadelphia that looked at mothers on Medicaid, and mothers that had a serious mental illness, so bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or major depression, were about 3 times more likely to lose custody of their children. Ugh. Or have child welfare involvement. So the fear is real, you know. Unfortunately, in the United States, there's still a lot of information about having a mental illness means you're going to be violent. And that's
right.
We know right. That's not the case.
That's still the perception. That's this gun thing.
Right. Right. Exactly. So, or you have one really awful case, and then that, you know, can kind of do a lot of parents in, which is unfortunate because to parent well, you need to take care of your whole self. And so really, parents should be seeking out treatment and services and supports. But, you know, some choose not to do so for fear of losing their children.
Melody, I want to turn to you. You came to this because of a history of pretty severe depression and anxiety. When did you realize there was something wrong?
I actually was diagnosed. I go back to when I lost my mom. That's when it all came about. Because I had taken care of her for 21 years and found her one morning she had passed. And I went into a major depression and severe anxiety. Did not realize until that led me into an addiction that I really was suffering with something that I couldn't handle and didn't understand. And so I sought treatment and was diagnosed. So I would say it's been about 10 years now.
And you've got a son.
I have a son who's now 16.
And so he was 6.
Yes.
At the time. What was his understanding?
He didn't have any understanding at that time. It was kind of going through the motions with him. And I can look back now and see where a lot of his frustration came from, because there were days, like Katie said, that I couldn't get out of bed. I wouldn't even open the blinds. And there were times that I just isolated him with me, you know, just to keep him safe. I didn't want to go places. So there, I can look back now and see where a lot of his anger and frustrations came from as a child and a very young child.
Where was his dad?
My son is adopted, and I'm a single parent, so there was no father in the home.
Was there a risk, like Katie talked about? Was there a risk of your losing him?
Thank God I never got to that point. It never got to that point. I think my son is the one catalyst that kept me above water.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for him, I don't know where I would be today. But there was never a risk of losing him. I did see that he got to school, even though I didn't go to my appointments, you know, because I eventually came out on disability. And that was really not a good thing, because now I had all this idle time that just, you know, just to do nothing and be very risky with my behaviors. But it never got to that point of possibly losing him. And I need to say, too, that even the fear, but it's the stigma that really is just so prevalent in our society and mental illness that is just horrible.
Well, it's prevalent in our society. It's prevalent inside of each one of us.
Of us,
too.
Exactly, yes.
So how did you deal with that? When and how did you seek treatment?
I sought treatment actually after, I'm going to be very honest, after an arrest. That was kind of my bottom. And I said, there's something wrong. This is more than I can handle. And I sought treatment very secretively, because in my family, it was, you know, those types of things were kept behind closed doors. And even once I was diagnosed, my family didn't understand what it was about. My sister,
sure.
My aunt, my dad, my dad still doesn't understand, and he's 95. But he's old school, and he doesn't get that. It's like, just stop it, you know. But not understanding that there's a chemical imbalance, there's some other things going on that I can't control. So, but again, my son was the catalyst for a lot of what I did during those times, and even going out and seeking treatment, because I knew he deserved better than what he was getting from me.
That's Melody Jackson. We're talking about parenting with a mental illness. She's got her own history of mental illness, and now she's a certified peer specialist and helps others. We're also joined here by Evan Kaplan, who's a person with a mental illness, and he's a co-founder of the Child and Family Connections. Katie Kaplan is here also in the studio, and she's with Temple University's Collaborative on Community Inclusion. Let's go to the phones. We've got Heather on the line. Hi, Heather.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to share my story. My daughter is 7 months old now, and I also have a four-year-old. And when she was born, I had such bad postpartum depression that I actually went to the hospital for a few days. And it was very stressful on my husband and my son. She's 7 months now, and I'm a lot better, but I was wondering if you had any advice for families with very young children when you're dealing with things like that.
How was your son? What kind of stress did it put on your son?
Well, my son is on the spectrum, on the autism spectrum.
Hmm.
He's high-functioning, so I was used to having to interact with him as much as possible, because that's what his therapists were telling me, but I also had a colicky baby. So when I was depressed, I wasn't able to interact with him and engage him like I should have been.
And your husband?
My husband, ironically enough, is a doctoral student in psychology at LaSalle, and he had to drop a few classes in order to kind of get through this.
So what would you like, ideally, from this phone call?
I was just kind of trying to call and raise an awareness about the stigma of having a baby, and, you know, you're supposed to love the baby and be so happy because you have a healthy baby, and that's not always the picture.
Do you still feel guilty?
No, because I know I did what I needed to do. I mean, I do feel a little bit guilty when my husband's classmates are all ahead of him in class, in where they are in their program. But
let's turn to Katie. I saw you were having a reaction.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking two things. One of the things that we do to help parents is to encourage them to not only to reach out and lean on social support. So there's a few things. I mean, your husband happened to be a psychology doctoral student, which is kind of convenient, so he probably understood. But for some spouses and partners and loved ones, like Melody was saying, her dad doesn't get it, getting them education, information about your mental health issue and strategies for how they can be supportive. And also educating, obviously, you know, it happened after you had your baby, you weren't able to like prepare, it wasn't an ongoing illness that you had or something that you were used to, but educating supporters about, you know, your approach to parenting, what your son needs and those sorts of things, so that if you're not capable of filling the role that you want to at that moment, that you know that your supporters are carrying out your wishes as you'd want them as a parent. And that's, I think, really important, because you want to remain in control as a parent. You're the parent. And, you know, the other thing is, I think that, you know, there could be all sorts of health issues. I think the reason why people might feel worse about your, you know, your husband being a little further behind is because of the stigma that's associated with mental illness. If you had some other illness like cancer, everybody would rally around and say, oh, I can't believe that your wife has cancer. You know, it's still perceived differently, I think, than physical health issues.
I do want to say, though, as a person with quadriplegia, you know, I still feel guilt about, you know, what this took away from other people. So the guilt, I think, is fair and balanced and gets distributed easily and readily across.
It might be the support then, I guess. Maybe it's really the support piece that's different. And people don't not know, people know, or they don't know how to help. You know, it's a hard thing to talk about.
Yeah. Heather, I hope... Melody, did you want to...
I did want to say one thing to Heather, is that being knowledgeable about what we go through and why we go through it was a big help for me, and you seem to have grasped that. And it was much easier for me to, once I understood that a lot of what I was going through was out of my control and that I needed help, whether it be by medication or by therapy or whatever. But I was able to then accept what I was going through and what it caused me to go through and how it may have affected others. And then now, and constantly and staying on top of advocating for myself and my child. And it seems like you've done that, and just keep doing that, because that guilt will disperse. It will lessen as time goes on, because you realize that you went through what you had to go through, and now you're doing what you need to do. And everything will fall back in place if it doesn't.
And one last little thing. We know a great deal, and I want to talk about your son. We know a great deal now about brain plasticity and resilience. And, you know, he lost some grounding underneath his feet for a little while, but he's got it back now. It is highly unlikely that what happened back then is going to have any long-term impact. It's possible, but it's highly unlikely. So I really appreciate your call. I really appreciate your openness and candor, and wish you the best, and enjoy those kids. Well, let's take a 60-second break. When we come back, we've got some callers who want to join the conversation, and I want to find out more about how to tell the children and when and what to say. We're talking about parenting with a mental illness today. We've got three guests, all here in the studio. Evan Kaplan is founder and CEO of Child and Family Connections. Melody Jackson is a person in recovery from mental health challenges. She's a certified peer specialist, and she's a supervisor. Katie Kaplan is with Temple University Collaborative on Community Inclusion of Individuals with Psychiatric Disabilities. If you have a psychiatric diagnosis and you are a parent, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you were raised by a parent with a psychiatric illness, give us a call. We're at 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Devereaux is a proud supporter of WHYY. For more than 100 years, Devereaux has been providing services to individuals with developmental disabilities and mental and behavioral health disorders. Founded locally by pioneering schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization now helps individuals across our nation to live healthier, happier, and more productive lives. Over the next 6 weeks, Wawa stores throughout southeastern Pennsylvania and New Jersey will help support Devereaux's work. More details at local Wawa stores.
1 in 3 families is affected by problems caused by drugs or alcohol. The Family Training Program is a service for those concerned about their child, age 12 to 25, that may be using drugs or drinking. If eligible, you will be invited to sessions with a family specialist to help make positive changes in your life and in the relationship with your child. Held in Philadelphia by the Treatment Research Institute, a supporter of WHYY. More at 877-I-WORRY-2, 877-I-WORRY-2, or online at iamconcerned.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about parenting with a mental illness. My guests are Evan Kaplan, Melody Jackson, and Katie Kaplan. Katie, it's no mistake how you come to this work. You were a child of a parent with mental illness. Tell us about your dad.
Sure. So I grew up with a father that had bipolar disorder. And, you know, when I started working in this area, the thought that because you had a mental illness might put you at risk to lose custody of your children was baffling to me because he was a great dad. But, you know, he did suffer some really serious bouts of depression. I don't even remember so well because I was pretty young. But what worked well in our situation was three things. Was that we had great supports. I had this remarkable mom, aunt and uncles, family members that rallied around us. My dad sought out treatment and services. They weren't always effective, unfortunately. And the last thing is what we were talking a little bit about earlier, which is this notion of resiliency. So this is a skill that we can teach parents, and it's something that my dad inherently understood. You know, the power of positive communication, getting us involved in extracurricular activities so that we built our own social support networks. In fact, my dad used to say to me when I was little, I think I was kind of a pain in the butt, but he would see me as being determined, and he'd say, with your determination, you could go through brick walls. I was like 6, and I knew what the word determination meant. And I can tell you that I'm 37, and that message is in my head to this day.
Are you still a pain in the butt?
Yeah, my husband's listening, and he would say, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. I got your back.
But resiliency, these are skills that we can teach parents. So if you're a parent with a mental health issue, there's lots of strategies that you can do to put protective factors in place to help buffer some of the negative effects that may occur. You know, if you have to get hospitalized and you have to physically be away from your child, there's things that you can do to, there's 4 of us. All 4 of us are living successful lives. We all went on to graduate school. We're doing pretty good. And my parents did, you know, despite my dad's mental health issues, that, you know, that wasn't a deal breaker. There was no reason to come in and take custody away in our case. Now, like I said, we had these things in place. And where I think the mental health service system needs to step up is that not all families have these natural support networks. Not all families are as lucky as my family. And I feel that, you know, the reason that drives my research is that we need to step up and fill this gap.
I would think your family would be in a minority. I mean, there's no way of measuring that, but...
No, there isn't a way to measure it. I mean, it's actually a research question I'm interested in. We don't know how many parents with mental illnesses are parenting well. We take a group of known child abusers or people who were accused of child neglect, and then we look for the prevalence of mental illness among that population. And really what we need to do is we need to see how many people out there with mental health issues are parents, and how many of them are parenting without incident, and what is it that allows them to parent well. It's probably things like having a mom like I had and so on.
Evan, I want to ask you about, Katie, you know, talked about the services her mother received. What services did you receive? Do you receive?
Sure. As an individual, I've got a very, very supportive family, and that my social support in that regard has been remarkable. And I've had the wherewithal and the means to get therapy and medication and those sorts of things. So that's been a great help. I attended a couple of support groups. DBSA, Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance, was one support for me. There's resources on the NAMI website, for example. So I was using what was available to me, but there weren't any programs per se specific to parents with a mental illness at the time. And that's where Child and Family Connections comes in to provide that type of a service for individuals.
And Melody, we know you did not have the kind of supportive family that we've been hearing about.
Well, I did. I've had a supportive family. They were very supportive. When I say my dad doesn't understand it, it doesn't mean he doesn't support me, but he supports me in the only way he can.
Good point, yeah.
You know, he was very supportive. They rallied around me going through my depression, my addiction, the whole nine yards, and they kept encouraging me to get help and get help and get help until I finally did.
And where did you, where, how?
I actually found an awesome agency. It's Al-Assist Behavioral Healthcare Center.
Say it again.
Al-Assist Behavioral Healthcare Center, where it's actually where I work today, where I receive services. And it's an outpatient outpatient program that offers mental health and drug and alcohol services. So I did individual therapy, medication management, and group therapy, which was, it just was, it just worked for me. It did a wonderful job for me. And so now I work there as a peer specialist and a recovery specialist, and also a peer specialist supervisor. But I support everyone who comes through the door, because I know what it's like to have walked through there and sat in that waiting room, and just, you know, encouraging folks that your strength showed from the time you walked through the door, because it took strength to just come in and ask for help. So, but outpatient treatment helped me immensely. I'm on medication. It took me 5 years to find the right combination. It was trial and error. But I don't regret a minute of it, and being able to support others. And then when I found Evan, or Evan found me, or however that kind of happened, and I find out about Child and Family Connection, and the fact that this is a whole new initiative for me, because I've talked to my son about my mental illness, but I haven't talked to him as much as I've learned through the workshops that we do.
Say more. What do you mean? You've talked to him, you haven't talked enough? What?
I didn't talk a lot. I did, because I didn't know how. And he was at different ages, different stages. Mm-hmm. I was at different ages and different stages. And we didn't, for example, if he, once I stepped into my recovery from both my disorders, if he was kind of getting under my skin, I said, well, do you like me well or do you like me sick? And he said, well, I like you well, Mom. I said, well, then stop it. You know, little things like that. But I really wouldn't discuss. He just knew there was another me, and I was different today than I used to be. So we never really had a discussion until recently when I began to work with Evan and doing the workshops and getting the information that shared with me. It gave me a dialogue to sit down and talk to myself.
Tell me about that dialogue.
Well,
if it's not too personal.
No, it's not. I was able to sit down. First of all, there is a very awesome book that we share in the workshop. And
What is it? What's the book?
I'm Not Alone by Michelle Sherman.
Okay. Thank you. And I realized that, first of all, I had to be very creative to get my son to read this book, because, you know, what Mom says, here, read this, it's good for you to read, he's not going to read it. So I had to just sit it down and let him find it, and I put my name in it as though it was mine, because anything that's mine becomes his. So he began to read it. And then we talked about writing a letter to my child about my mental illness. But I realized I had to be creative with that. So I didn't give him the letter. I mailed him the letter, and I addressed it to me.
What did you say?
I went back to times I thought he may remember. I wasn't very explicit, but I told him that I've come to some awareness that he may have been affected by the times I was struggling with my depression and my anxiety and even my addiction. And he understands addiction now, because he has his own challenges right now. Mm. Yeah, he has some challenges with that. But so I wrote to him about what it was like for me, first of all, and then, you know, wanting to know what it was like for him, because it was not a discussion that we had ever had. And, you know, if he would, when he's comfortable, we could sit down and talk about it. And we did talk about it. And he said, Mommy, I don't remember a lot of times. And he doesn't, because he was young. But he said, I love you. And, you know, I don't think it affected me in any way. So we did have a discussion after I wrote the letter to him. And I explained to him what depression was and what anxiety was and what it felt like for me. Even my addiction and where it took me, because a lot of where my addiction took me, he's not aware of, as far as financially and things like that, because I was able to bounce back,
mm-hmm.
you know, so he doesn't know a lot about that, but, just educating him on what my conditions were.
What a gift, that kind of candor. Apropos of family discussions, let's go to the phone. We've got Katie. Katie?
Hi, yes. I thought I'd call in. My experience growing up was pretty much the opposite of your guest Katie's. My mother has schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and is an alcoholic. And her parents have some similar issues as well. And we really, my brother and I, didn't have any sort of support. And building relationships outside of the home is really discouraged, I think, because of, you know, the shame and things like that. And so I guess why I'm calling is because hearing Katie describe how her father and how her family handled the situation sounds really wonderful. And I guess people who have mental illness, I guess I would just sort of urge them to think about their children. And I think the most helpful thing they can do in many cases is to recognize that there is no way for them to give their children what they need when they're sick. And they need to be willing to hand over some of the parenting duties to people who are well and who can do those things. Because not only if they're unable to do those things or they're not helping their child, but there's things that kids should not see. And anyway, I think that protecting them and helping them should be the priority.
Before I ask our guest to comment, Katie, could you tell us how you are now, what impact this has had on you going forward?
It's had a really big impact. I've sort of struggled with, I think, feelings that kids in my situation have feelings of anxiety and definitely have trouble with relationships. I'm happily married, so not relationships like that, but just with friends. It's really difficult for me to trust people and understand how to read social cues. I feel anxious a lot. So I guess that would be the main impact, really. And I have a son now myself. And otherwise, I think things are good.
Are you getting help? Do you have support
your
life?
I have, yes. I have.
Good. Good.
I have gotten support.
All right.
While my mother was sick, she's still sick, but when I was in the home, both my brother and I were sexually abused. Well, we were physically abused and sexually abused by family members. And I think if my mom had been like more aware of what was going on and healthier, hopefully that could have been prevented. And I think that my father felt overwhelmed, and he, you know, was conveniently busy with work and things because of that. And so no one was really taking care of us.
Can I ask how you feel about your mother today?
Oh gosh, so many feelings. I feel guilt because of the bad feelings I have towards her. I feel pity, but I feel guilt because I don't think I would leave my son alone with her. And I know that probably would hurt her a lot. And I feel guilt because I get frustrated with her because she, you know, has problems. And I feel like I should show her more mercy, and because I don't have those because I get frustrated with her, I feel guilty. I feel upset that she let bad things happen to us. But I've gotten past some of that. But now mostly I feel sad. I feel kind of just sad and guilty.
Yeah, that's the underpinnings. That's what goes on underneath all of those emotions, is just sadness. Just, I mean, I feel it, a kind of pervasive sadness for what happened to that child, those two children, you and your brother. Just sad.
Yeah.
Just sad. Katie, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you very much.
Do wish you the best. Evan, before we go to break, I saw you having a reaction to Katie's phone call.
Sure. Well, I was thinking about my own guilt as a parent with mental illness, and I carry that around with me, and I'm in therapy, and I work through it. But it's something that I think is always going to be there, and it's tough. And I wonder sometimes what my daughter's life or experience would be like if I were healthier in some respects. No, there's no way to change that, but it does make me feel sad on occasion.
Yeah, and of course, one doesn't know if you were healthier, we don't know how your daughter's life would change, both for the better and the worst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
sure.
With you being more defended, more less open, and mm-hmm. less vulnerable. Who knows? Who knows? That's a discussion I'll bet you probably could have with that remarkable child of yours. She's that insightful. I've had that discussion with my daughter, too. It was really insightful. We both wound up crying a lot.
Sounds like a nice moment.
Yeah, it really was. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, Katie, I want to talk to you more about resilience and what you laid out. So the Katie I just referred to is Katie Kaplan. She's with the Temple University Collaborative on Community Inclusion of Individuals with Psychiatric Disabilities. Evan Kaplan, we just heard that name, is co-founder of and CEO of Child and Family Connections. This is an organization that supports parents with psychiatric disabilities and their children. I'm also joined by Melody Jackson. She describes herself as a proud person in recovery from mental health challenges. She's a certified peer specialist and a certified recovery specialist. Our number here is 888-477-9499. If you are a person with a psychiatric diagnosis raising children, give us a call. Or if you were raised by a parent with a mental illness, 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
University of the Sciences in Philadelphia supports WHYY. University of the Sciences accepts transfer students into its undergraduate degree programs and offers convenient evening office hours to help students with their questions and learn about the admission process. Students can also find out about starting or furthering their career in pharmacy, chemistry, healthcare business, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and more. More online at usciences.edu/transfer.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Violinist Gil Shaham joins Yannick Nezé-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra in concert for the demanding Brahms Violin Concerto. Gil Shaham tickets are available online or by phone 215-893-1999 today. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center, Gil Shaham plays Brahms with Yannick Nezé-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb. We're talking about parenting with a mental health diagnosis with Evan Kaplan, Melody Jackson, and Katie Kaplan. I'd like to go right to the phones. We've got Andrea on the line. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Dan. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
Well, I've just been listening to the program with great interest because my mother was a diabetic that suffered with depression, and my brother had antisocial personality disorder and then had drug abuse that eventually killed him. So that was a lot of drama in the family, and I have depression. And I also have two wonderful little boys who are 6 and 9. And listening to the conversation, I guess a question or a comment would be my focus with them, and I appreciated the other woman saying, you know, different conversations for different ages and stages, that appropriate to their age level, bringing up their family history, because my concern is that when they become teenagers and they go through hormonal changes and, you know, what's the meaning of life and also being tempted by drugs or alcohol, that they know their family history and they know their family genetics and that they're informed when they make those choices when we're not around of what the possible repercussions could be. And also, even if they don't take drugs or alcohol, just, you know, what typical sadness or typical questioning about life and what might be something where you want to get help and you want to say something.
By Jove, you've dialed the right number. Katie?
You know what? Let me take a second for that one. sorry, you were throwing out a lot of stuff.
There were a lot of things.
And I just have to say, also, let's hear it for the pains in the butt.
Thank you. Yes, I'm remarkably good at that.
So, well, apparently I just was to Katie just now, so, so I feel pretty good about that. There was a lot of issues here. You know, one is how do we have that discussion? The other is the genetic factors, which is a major consideration here, because a parent with a mental health diagnosis raising a child was likely to have been raised by a parent with a mental health diagnosis.
Yeah, I guess what I was thinking about is we have a study going on right now. It's an online parenting intervention, and it has an educational component. And when I was thinking about important for parent-child communication, so it's not just about talking to your child about your mental health issue, but children, depending on what age they are, might start to worry that, oh, my mom, you know, she's sick, I'm going to be sick. My dad has this, I'm going to have that. So it's having conversations about the health issue and, you know, not only the potential impact on them, that whether or not they could develop a mental illness, but also having understanding that, you know, everybody gets sad or people feel nervous, and not worrying so that your child doesn't think, oh my God, you know, I'm sick, I'm going to be crazy, you know. So I think that's an important part of the conversation that you touched on, particularly with drug and alcohol as well. You'd want to have conversations about all those things and how it can interact.
Melody?
Hi, and if I could just add that, and the other thing is that my child did not think it was his fault. Because children will begin to think it's that they're causing this to happen. And the other thing I want to say is culturally, we talked in my family, we talked about all conditions that we had genetically, hypertension, diabetes, whatever it was. And had my family, because I know there was some mental illness and addiction on another generation, but had we talked about that as we do the other conditions, I think it would have been much more easier for me to recognize when I was, you know, beginning to have some effects of it. So I think just talking to our children, because it is normal, I mean, it's not abnormal for these things to happen. And conditions and diseases do happen, and they are genetic. And if we include that in everything we do and educating our children on the things that are in our family line, then they won't see it as being abnormal with other peers and other folks. And so I think that's also a part. And of course, being age appropriate is one of the most difficult things. But we kind of know our kids. We know what they understand and what they can't. So it's just, you know, being able to talk to them at the level that we're used to speaking to them about and just including everything.
I heard one mother describe her depression to her young child around this age is it's like mommy gets the flu in her brain, mm-hmm. and when she does, she's not right, and it could last a week or more or less, but that's what happens, and I get the flu every now and then in my brain. And I thought that was very sweet, and it took responsibility away from the child. And as they get older, you know, later they can learn about the genetics. Andrea, I hope our brief discussion about your call was helpful to you, and I wish you and your children the best.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you again for your program.
Let's go right back to the phones. Ben is on the line. Hi, Ben.
Hey there. How are you doing?
Hi. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm calling because basically my mom has kind of scrolled through not only several diagnoses throughout my life, that some of them have just changed names, I guess. You know, she was a manic depressive when I was growing up and now is bipolar, which I gather are similar, if not this, just a renaming. But also has scrolled through many, many different medications, and that's really, she's treated herself a lot more with that than with therapy. And I've sort of dealt with the fallout almost the opposite way. I see actually two different therapists, and have never done any medication. You know, maybe in my teens some self medication, but I guess I'm trying to find out from your panel. I've heard that some of my anxiety, but more importantly to me, some of my problems with decision making. I have real issues making a decision, deciding on one direction. And I have heard before that there's some connection between a bipolar parent and that particular disorder, and I'm wondering if anybody on your panel knows anything about that.
Well, really. I'm seeing a lot of shoulder shrugs, so let me weigh in on this. I'm not aware of that particular connection. What I am aware of is that difficulty making decisions is all about anxiety, and you know, it's about developing a different relationship with your anxiety. When you have trouble making decisions, that means typically that your anxiety is in charge. And if you can develop a different relationship with your anxiety, you know, anxiety is just information. It's just information. And sometimes it carries valuable information, and most of the time it carries worthless information. But, you know, if you have a different relationship with it, you can take a step back, you can assess it. Is there anything valuable here, or should I just ignore it and go forward and just have faith that you make a right decision, you're okay, you make a wrong decision, you'll be okay, you'll survive. But it's about changing your relationship with your anxiety. Ben, I appreciate your call, and I do wish you the best. I hope your relationship with your anxiety shifts. Evan, I want to know about your workshops that Melody referred to earlier, your Building Bridges workshops.
Sure. It's called Parenting with a Mental Illness, and it's an 8-week program. Melody is one of our certified peer specialist facilitators, a phenomenal facilitator and a great role model. The program runs for 8 weeks for a couple of hours each night, and it brings together parents with psychiatric disabilities in a classroom setting, in an interactive classroom setting, to learn about mental illness and to learn how to and develop the tools to talk to their children about their psychiatric disability. We bring in sort of a multimedia type approach. We do role playing. We have guest speakers. There's film. We do some creative arts therapies, a lot of informal presentations, and then a lot of discussion period as well. The goals are ultimately to help the parents have that conversation and develop those skills, and not just have a conversation, but have an ongoing conversation and dialogue and relationship with their children about their mental illness. And also to develop a community of other parents who are going through similar situations.
How do they find you?
We do some recruitment on our own through a network of behavioral health providers in the greater Philadelphia area. We get referrals from other programs.
How do our listeners find you?
Sure, we have a website. It's childandfamilyconnections.org with a hyphen between each of those words. Our phone number is 267-808-8081, and people are welcome to call, and we can talk to them about when and where the next workshops are going to take place.
And we'll get that information on our web page. And Katie, you're all about keeping families together.
Right. As I mentioned earlier, parents with mental health issues are much more likely to lose custody. And it's not just about the stigma and discrimination or the stigma of the mental illness. It's also about our state laws. So there's only 14 states in the United States that do not allow a disability to be used against a parent in termination of parental rights. So, you know, if a parent has a diagnosis of a mental illness, that in and of itself in some states can be grounds to not provide reasonable efforts to reunify a family. And it can be grounds to terminate their rights. So, you know, we see it as a blatant violation of civil rights. You know, community inclusion is a right of all Americans. And, you know, we need to work to provide better services, but we also need to work to change our state laws so that they don't violate the rights of individuals with disabilities.
Hmm. And what do you see as the future?
The future I see as, I mean, right now the mental health system is going through this recovery transformation, this notion that people with mental health issues can live full, meaningful lives. And, you know, things like housing and employment and education are extremely important. But to me, if you think about what's most important in your own life, I would say my son, my husband, sure, my family. And that has to be a part of the mental health recovery process. And we're getting there. Mental health providers are seeing parenting as a priority. It could be a great motivator to engage someone in mental health recovery. So I see that direction. And I also see, you know, the National Council on Disability recently republished a report on civil rights for parents with disabilities.
So there is progress, and there's progress being made because of all three of you. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. What you're doing is so very, very important and courageous. We've been talking about parenting with mental health diagnosis with Evan Kaplan, Melody Jackson, and Katie Kaplan. Thanks to all three of you for joining us. Next week on Voices, we're going to re-air our program on grit. It was exciting and important program. Well, you can find us at whyy.org/voices. We're on Twitter at Voices in the Fam, and I'm at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Fred Snyder. Elizabeth Perez-Loon is our executive producer of audio content. Emily Haas is our production assistant. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Jennifer Lynn is our producer, and Emily Goodman is helping us out for a couple of weeks. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.